Yeah.
I'm going to call the meeting to order and ask the secretary to call the roll.
Curtis.
Present.
Gilbert.
Present.
Hightower. Lockett.
Present.
Rogers.
Present.
Sharma.
Present.
Scholler. Simmons. Tedrick.
Present.
The quorum is established.
Okay. There will be a public question and comment portion available at today's meeting that will last up to 15 minutes total. How many speakers do we have?
We have four.
Okay, I'm going to each speaker will have 4 minutes per speaker. Who is the first speaker?
Kim Archer.
Dr. Archer. Here she is.
Wow, this is quite a room. Where would you like me?
You're in the hot seat down there.
It's all right.
I've been here before.
Thank you. Hi. Thanks for letting me speak today. I'm Kim Archer. I'm a professor of music here at SIUE. I'm in my 15th year as a faculty member, and I just celebrated my 47th birthday. And I say that because about the time that I was born, your predecessors on this board implemented a funding allocation formula between Edwardsville and Carbondale. But let's take stock. That was 1975, 45 years ago. Dr. Hightower had just graduated from SIUE. Captain and Tennille was on the radio. The hot video game was Pong. Microsoft was founded that year, and gas was 57 cents a gallon. Things have certainly changed. Likewise, the identity of your system campuses has also changed, but this formula has not. I think we can all agree that expecting teachers to do more with less has devastated public education nationwide. Yet this is exactly what you've asked SIUE to do for the last 45 years, when for every dollar you get from the legislature, you give 64 cents to Carbondale, but only 36 cents to Edwardsville. As you know, SIUE's fall enrollment this year was 13,000. Carbondale's was only 11,000. And by the way, in 1975, Carbondale's enrollment was 21,000. This change in enrollment has been happening for more than a decade, so the shift itself is now the status quo. Don't you think that after a decade, SIUE has proven that it gives more to the system, contributes more than just 36%. But while we continue to grow, you literally force us each year to do more with less. We struggle with about half of what Carbondale gets. And what Carbondale gets is to support a paradigm that has not existed since 1975. By the way, Darth Vader and Rocky Balboa are newer than that funding formula. In 2019, Governor Pritzker balanced representation on this board, and that sent a very clear message. Your charge is to look after both campuses equally. SIUE has proven over 45 years that we will grow with changing industries, with changing technologies, urbanization, and even the shift to a gig economy. But it takes fair funding to continue doing that. By asking us to keep doing more with less, you're creating the kind of dire consequences we've seen in the K-12 world. For example, SIUE has fewer degree offerings than Carbondale, even though we have more students. Our administration informs us that we can't afford more instruction at this university. Innovations, new programs, but also basics, like more sections of core classes, so our more students than Carbondale can graduate on time, are not approved unless they are budget neutral. No new costs with new things. In fact, the administration tells us right now there isn't money for the programs we already have, and they will be cutting specialties within degrees. Now, how is that fair to students in a university that is growing? And by the way, this no new costs mantra is also the administration's excuse for not promptly and fully implementing the collective bargaining agreement that this board signed with the faculty 6 months ago. Now, is that how you want to be represented on the SIUE campus? On the other hand, this board threw away $97,000 on a study of reallocation. Remember, you promised us a new formula this year. Instead, your lowest bidder wrote you a bad undergraduate essay. A lot of words to obfuscate a lack of understanding and content. So then you promised us, well, half of only new money from the state while we wait 3 more years for a revamped formula. Well, there's a saying in education. The best indication of future behavior is past behavior. There can be no doubt that SIUE requires a larger share of system resources than just 36%. We contribute more to the system than just 36%. Don't you think that shifting all the new funding entirely to SIUE is a gentle way to keep your promises and begin balancing the scales without taking anything from Carbondale? Don't you think it's time to stop kicking the can down the road and make a decision that is fair to changed identities at both of your campuses?
Thank you, Dr. Archer.
Our next speaker is Mark Pepsel.
It's pronounced Pepsel.
Pepsel.
I can stand up or sit down. I'm pretty much the same height either way. It's up to you. Your call. I have just a few comments. Hello to the Chancellor. I had mint tea for lunch, so you're safe. I'm the Faculty Association, the union president at SIUE, and I just want to say a few words about system allocation. Allow me to start with the general question. Are the people of Metro East worth less than the people farther south in Illinois? If so, why and what could we do to be worth more? Should we teach more students with half the faculty and staff because we're already doing that? Should we serve first generation and other disadvantaged students from all over the state because we do that? Should our students take on extra jobs and extend time between when they start school and when they graduate so they can try to stay ahead of student loans because they do that? And should our staff members take on long lists of responsibilities that might otherwise be shared among multiple staffers while the SIU administration walks through another contract because our staff is doing that? What else can we do to be more efficient? And should we be more efficient, really, if we're going to toss this money into a savings account that the system can draw on when it's convenient? It sometimes feels as though we work for the students of the Metro East some and then do another portion of our jobs to support our sister school. I know you cannot harm SIU Carbondale. The surrounding towns and counties depend on it, and it's a political motivation as much as one of rational decision making in between the two campuses. If you can't revisit the core funding formula, or you refuse to do so because of political pressures, we'd ask that all new funds need to come to SIUE. This would give us an idea of how to better invest and plan for the next decade. We have mid-career professionals in St. Louis who could use new programs. We're working on digital badging. We're working to develop more online programs, and we're connecting to the new entrepreneurial and tech centers in St. Louis the way only we can. But by delaying reallocation between campuses, we miss opportunities. We lose students to other colleges in the St. Louis area, which is rich with colleges and other university and higher education opportunities. And for now, we're educating more undergraduate students than anyone else in this area in our metro region. But how long is that going to last if we continue to subsidize more or less status quo in Carbondale? It was said that the new president will have to make these decisions. But what could be learned that we don't already know? Edwardsville educates a couple thousand more students with roughly half the faculty and staff. If you want to take research, mission, and other factors into account regarding what to do about the allocation formula, it's understandable, but as long as the old formula maintains the status quo and inhibits our ability to serve our students, to serve the people of this region, Southern Illinois, Metro East, we ask that all new state funds entering the system come to SIUE only. That would be a gesture towards SIU equality. The board and both campuses advocate at the state level to support higher education in ways that stop pushing the burden of higher ed so heavily onto students' backs in the form of student loans. We're on the same team when it comes to requesting things from the state of Illinois. In our administration at SIUE, we're on the same team when it comes to discussing with y'all, the Board of Trustees, how to allocate state funds between the two campuses. But we have some disagreements with our own administration, particularly in terms of when it comes to paying us overloads for work we've already been doing. We have a contract that calls for us to address these issues, but we're told there's no money. And this is for work that's already being done. If you can't pay for work that's being done, how are we going to enter into a new decade of service to Metro East and Southern Illinois? How are we going to continue to grow in ways that serve high school graduates, but also mid-career professionals, and that take advantage of the opportunities the St. Louis region avails to us?
If the only time to kind of wrap it up.
If the only conceivable way to move forward is to devalue ourselves, maybe we can't move at all. Standing relatively still seems to attract funding under the current structure as it is. Thanks for your
time.
Thank
you very much.
Our next speaker is Richard Esner.
Is this okay?
Yes.
All right. Well, thanks for giving me the opportunity to speak with you today. My name's Rick Esner, and I'm a biology professor at SIUE. And I'd like to tell you a little bit about how past budget cuts are impacting my teaching and the learning opportunities for my students. I'm a firm believer in experiential learning. For biology students especially, it's really important to get them out in the field to actively engage in learning techniques, to see conservation in the wild, and to meet wildlife biologists, to do research in the field. Those kinds of things are really important. So keeping them actively engaged is a central part of my teaching philosophy. I incorporate this strategy into a couple of my courses in particular. I teach an ornithology and a wildlife management course, and I offer trips to the southern United States that time of year. It's better to go south around spring break. And so we do these trips where we visit wildlife refuges and national parks like the Everglades. Students are able to see endangered species, invasive species. They meet with wildlife biologists and learn about these conservation and management strategies. And so those are really great opportunities. The other thing that we do, I collaborate with a faculty member in our department, Peter Minchin, and we do study abroad opportunities in the summer where we take students to places like Panama, to the Northern Rockies. We go up into Canada and visit all these national parks. So it's a really great experience. It's essential for these students. It would be to have a biology degree if you're interested in wildlife biology and to never have been out in the field experiencing these things. It would be like training a medical doctor to work with, to be a doctor but never having them do a residency or something, right? They have to actually experience, nature and learn about these things. So it's important to note that most of my students have never been outside of the Midwest. And these trips have allowed them to see really amazing things. They've seen deforestation firsthand in Panama. They've experienced that. They've accompanied a renowned tropical ecologist in the field from the Smithsonian Tropical Research Institute on Barro Colorado Island and learned about community interactions and long-term research in that really important place. They've learned about the devastating effects of climate change by hiking through fire-scarred landscapes in Yellowstone and seeing glaciers in northern in the northern Rockies in Canada melting. Okay, so that's really important. And in terms of learning, these are life-changing experiences that take them way beyond the textbook. So these are things that they're learning about, in their textbooks, but then they actually get to experience it, and that's important for training the next generation of scientists. Unfortunately, for many of my students, I'm increasingly hearing that they can't afford to go. And a big part of that is a loss of, a small amount of financial support from SIUE that we used to receive. Those have gone away because of budget cuts. So, for example, there used to be a course grant that I could get that would, it was like maybe $500 or $1,000 that I could get to take students on these excursions. That money is gone because of budget cuts. I used to be able to get my own costs covered. That money's gone. I used to be able to get money to cover the international health insurance for my students when they were traveling, out of the country because their health insurance wasn't any good in Panama or Canada. that money has gone away. So because that support's no longer available, I've started to, you know, the cost have increased, and I've noticed that the number of students who are interested in participating has gone down, which is getting me to start questioning whether these trips are going to be viable anymore. So
you're kind of wrapping up, so you're running out of
Okay. So with additional investment in SIUE, perhaps these sources of funding could be restored. Perhaps we could offer need-based scholarships similar to the Saluki Abroad program offered by our sister campus. Unfortunately, our students can't afford to wait for reallocation because these are juniors and seniors. They're not going to be here 3 years from now. So I would just ask you to consider how delaying reallocation translates into missed learning opportunities for these students.
Thank you very much.
Our last speaker is Andrzej Lozowski.
Welcome. So my name is Andy Lozowski. I'm a faculty in electrical engineering, but also the department chair. I have been with SIU for the last 20 years, pretty much as long as the data is published in a fact book. So I just wanted to present today some information about the reality of our department. We have three programs, two undergraduate programs and one graduate program. So we have the undergraduate program in electrical engineering, undergraduate program in computer engineering, and the master's degree program, graduate program in electrical engineering. Computer engineering is not computer science. That's a separate thing. Computer science is about programming. Computer engineering is about building computers. So in School of Engineering, we also have mechanical engineers, civil engineers. We have construction department. We also have computer science. And I just wanted to go over the reality of what's happening. In 2015, one of our faculty members retired, and we could not rehire a person to replace him just because the budget cuts are coming, so we had to do that. For the last 20 years up until 2015, our department had 10 faculty members. Presently, we have 9 faculty members. For the last 20 years up until 2016, we would graduate about 40 undergraduate students every year, and we would graduate about 40 graduate students every year. Now, with this one faculty member gone, starting 2016-17, we had to practically cannibalize our graduate program, because in order to maintain accreditation of the other two undergraduate programs, which is number one priority, we had to stop offering certain courses in the graduate program. And that consequently means that our enrollment of students in the graduate level courses or in the graduate courses is declining. The main reason for that is the students want to see what they're going to study when they come in here. Presently, we only have 3 graduate courses that we can offer. And it used to be more. And there is just nobody to teach them. So we have them on the books, and I try to rotate them. But essentially, I have to cancel classes, you know, when I run out of the faculty that could potentially teach them. So with that, you know, there is an opportunity maybe to hire a call staff or other things, but the person that retired and was never hired was the essential person for computer architectures, practically kind of like a program director for computer engineering, and he would also oversee what was happening on a graduate level in the graduate program. Well, that person is now gone, so we have an instructor that does that, but even that instructor has to teach undergraduate courses. Our lab manager is teaching undergraduate courses as well, even though he should focus more on maintaining the labs. So between the faculty and support staff, we're trying to do best. But essentially, looking forward, enrollment on the undergraduate side, the number of graduates on the undergraduate side keeps increasing. It's actually double than what it used to be. We have to put resources there on the undergraduate side. And then we are just watching the graduate program kind of dwindle. You know, we try to do best to maintain it, but it doesn't look good for the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Okay, the next, actually before the next item, which is tuition and fees discussion, I want to welcome the five permanent trustee members that were confirmed in January. In December, I was in contact with President Cullerton, asking, knowing that he was going to retire and resign, that he try to get the five board members that Governor Pritzker had nominated confirmed before he left his presidency. As many of you know, Senator Cullerton and I were roommates in law school. John told me he would do what he could. Well, the session was on a Sunday, right? Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, on a Sunday. Yeah, there you go, over there. So I'm at home and not knowing what's going on. All of a sudden, I get a text from John Charles who said, Ed Curtis has been confirmed. A few minutes later, I get another text. John Simmons has been confirmed. A few minutes later, I get another text. Trustee Tedrick was confirmed. Then a few minutes later, I get another text. Trustee Sharma was confirmed. Well, then I didn't get a text for a long time.
Did that surprise you?
I'm wondering about Dr. Hightower. Finally, it comes through that Dr. Hightower was confirmed. So that night, I text Senator Cullerton, thanking him for getting my five board members confirmed. And then he called me a few days later. And he said, Phil, he said, my last legislative act as president of the Senate and as a state senator was to confirm the five board members of the Board of Trustees. And he said, four of them went through real easy. He said, but I had a problem with Dr. Hightower. He said, many members of my caucus remember the bad calls he made to the University of Illinois and Northwestern games. And I had to twist some arms to get him confirmed. So, but he was able to do it, but it wasn't easy, Dr. Hightower. Your past is catching up now.
He reminds me of that often.
Well, anyway, that is one thing we wanted to get accomplished. So, and no other trustee members from any other university were confirmed. So they're still hanging out there. But anyway, wow. Welcome.
Good.
Permanent. Yeah. Okay, with the tuition and fees discussion, I want to say that over the past several weeks, Vice Chair Hightower and I have been in discussions with campus administrators regarding the issue of tuition and fees for the upcoming academic year, and holding the cost of higher education down in order to attract more in-state students for the higher education in Illinois, as you know, has been a priority of our governor and legislators. When Governor Pritzker visited both the Carbondale campus to announce the release of the funds for the communication building and the Edwardsville campus when he announced the release of the funds for the health science building, Governor Pritzker consistently emphasized affordability as the key to attracting more students to Illinois public universities. And it didn't go unnoticed that the governor was none too pleased with the University of Illinois when they raised their tuition for the next academic year just a few weeks earlier. At the December board meeting, both campuses reported a potential for more students this fall. That uptick in applications and admissions on both campuses is continuing to this day. Both campuses have also seen an increase in the number of transfer students, as both campuses have strengthened ties with area community colleges. In keeping in line with the governor's vision of accessibility and affordability for higher education, coupled with the efforts and positive steps on both campuses to increase enrollment, it is my belief and hope that this board will freeze tuition and fees for the 2021 academic year. Now, this recommendation to the board was only after thoughtful consideration and discussion with the Chancellor Penbrook and Dunn, as well as Dean Cruz of the medical school. Dr. Hightower and I are going to recommend to the board that we freeze tuition and fees not only at the undergraduate and graduate level, but for the system's four professional schools, being dental, law, medicine, and pharmacy. I want to compliment the work of both chancellors and Dean Cruz and their staff, who have managed administrative budgets in an effort to hold down costs for students and their families. Deep appreciation needs to go out to them. In a world of rising costs for everything, they've been able to ensure that expenses are not being passed on. And I want to add that after our press release went out last week regarding this recommendation, we received nothing but positive feedback in press. And even Governor Pritzker on his Facebook page was proud to see the SIU system on the rise. So it's going to be our recommendation. I don't know, Dr. Hightower, whether you want to say anything, but it's going to be our recommendation to the Finance Committee and to the board tomorrow that tuition and fees be frozen for this coming academic year. If any of the board members have any questions of any of the chancellors or Dean Cruz, now's the time to ask them. I know Dr. Sharma would like to see a reduction, won't you?
Definitely.
And he believes, and there's some validity to it, that if we reduce tuition, we will make up the cost by
increasing students.
By the increase in students. So, okay. All right. If nothing else on the tuition and fees, we will next close the meeting and go into executive session. Do I have a motion to close the meeting?
Okay.